100 years ago, you didn't see much cancer in humans. You didn't see much cancer in animals. This huge rise, I think it was one in 100 about a century ago. So what has caused this dramatic increase in the rates of cancer? Well, you have to look at something other than genetics. Genetics don't change to that extent in 2.5 generations. What affects our genes? Vaccines, the foods that we're eating, toxicity in our lives.
Welcome to today's interview on preventing pet cancer here at brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and I'm joined by Ty Bollinger, the co-creator of The Truth About Pet Cancer, a docuseries that we are featuring at brightu.com. And I have on the table here with me my dog, Rhodey. How you doing, Rhodey? How you doing? Yeah? You doing good? Good boy. Yes, you are. Okay, so he's going to chime in with some taste testing or something later. But welcome, Ty. It's good to have you back.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you having me on there, especially now that Rhodey's sharing the stage with you. This is cool.
Yeah, I disturbed his sleep because my studio time is his sleep time. So he was on the ground. Now look at him. He's got his paw on my arm. He's asking me to go play or something. What are you doing there, Rhodey? All right. So anyway, importantly, look, I've got a load of questions for you here. That's for sure. But this is about The Truth About Pet Cancer docuseries. Begins streaming March 21st. It's free to watch with registration beginning on March 21st. And you just go to brightu.com to register for it. Now, Ty, you put this together with all these experts and, you know, you are well known as an incredible documentary filmmaker and researcher on topics like cancer and vaccines and more. I want to ask you this question. It seems like a lot of people who have dogs and cats, their lifestyles are not necessarily the best fit for the dogs and cats. And specifically, there are a lot of really active dogs, like I have a Belgian Malinois here. Yeah. But I'm active. I'm jogging and I take him on the runs, obviously. But a lot of people don't do that. So how much in your research does a sedentary lifestyle contribute to disease, cancers, or even diabetes among dogs and cats?
Yeah, that's definitely a big contributor. And thanks for having me on again, and always enjoy it. But it's a big contributor to the sedentary lifestyle of pets, just like with sedentary people. You know, if you stop moving, that's when the problems arise in your body. You know, the movement stimulates the lymphatic system to detoxify and so forth in humans. Does the same with pets. Pets need to move. They need to be active. And unfortunately, with a lot of people today, they're working all day. The pet's stuck in the house, right? May not be able to get out. Maybe going in the litter box all day until the pet owner gets home at night. And then, you know, maybe they take them for a 5-minute walk. It's not enough for pets. They need to be, you know, ideally they need to be outside running around, not in the house. I mean, I understand that if you have to do it, you have to do it. But all that to say, that's not enough exercise. It's not enough movement for animals. And there's several veterinarians that we interviewed. I think it was Dr. Karen Becker mentioned some alarming rates of disease because of sedentary lifestyle in dogs specifically, if I remember correctly. So it's very important for them to be able to run around. Another thing with indoors is you've got so many chemicals that are in the carpets.
That's right.
And there's cleaning products that are toxic. All these things that are in that space, if you don't have a good air purifier, if it's this, recycling the same air, that dog and cat, they're breathing that all day as well. And that can be cause some problems with their immune system and with, you know, allergic reactions and with cancer and all kinds of things that are caused by chemicals because they're exposed to it all day, especially if they stay inside.
Now, let's talk about what people put on their lawns, because then, you know, people let their dogs out, let their cats out, you know, to go in the yard. But then their yards are often extremely toxic because they've been putting all kinds of herbicides. They could be spraying, you know, glyphosate is a very common one. They could be spraying like 2,4-D weed killer. This is very common, especially when there's an HOA around that's going to fine you for having dandelions in your yard, even though dandelions are good medicine. You know, you should want them to grow so you can harvest them and their roots, etc. But when talk to us about when dogs go outside in an unnatural, toxic environment, now they're getting exposed. their feet are getting covered with these toxins, and dogs lick their fur. You know, they lick their feet if they have, you know, if a toenail gets broken or whatever, they're going to lick their feet. They're just licking up the pesticides, aren't they?
Yeah. And cats do that too. So we have a lot of cats, and cats are constantly licking themselves. They're very, very clean animals, but they lick every square inch of their body. Believe me, every square inch.
Yeah. You know, Steve Martin.
That's all you need to know.
Remember Steve Martin's joke? He said, I gave my cat a bath. The hair stuck to my tongue, but the cat loved it. that's an old Steve Martin joke.
Yeah, that's true though. But you mentioned glyphosate though. That's absolutely right. So we mentioned this in the last interview. It's not a matter of national security, despite what Trump's recently said. Glyphosate's toxic, causes cancer. Case after case have shown that. It's World Health Organization declared it to be a known carcinogen. So if you're spraying glyphosate, we know it causes cancer in pets. But if it's not the glyphosate, it could be other herbicides or pesticides. It could be these ant killers, roach killers, things spraying in our yard, on our yard, on the tree, whatever it is, on the grass, in the dirt to make sure the weeds don't grow. That's where your dog and cat is. They're walking, they're breathing, and with both species, they're licking it. Dogs are probably eating it.
Yeah.
Cats are a little bit more discerning, but they're all licking it up as they clean their bodies.
Toys also, right? So my dog loves to fetch certain toys. So you throw toys out in the yard, those toys are collecting all those toxins, and then it's going right into your dog's mouth. So I would say that one of the number one things people need to be aware of is how toxic is their home and how toxic is their environment. And I also want you to speak to people love, for whatever reason, they take their dogs and cats, especially dogs, to a groomer. And the groomer, in almost every case, uses highly toxic, artificial fragrance dog shampoo. Mm-hmm. I mean, what torture for the dog, because the dog's, you know, very sensitive sense of smell. But if you take your dog to a groomer, you have to bring your own fragrance-free soap or shampoo. Otherwise, your dog's going to smell like, you know, detergent on purpose, because they all do after the groomer, 100%. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I agree. If you're going to a groomer, nothing wrong inherently with a groomer, but if they're using toxic shampoos or other lotions or chemicals, you want to bring your own. That's very important, because just like humans, dogs and cats, even though they have a layer of fur, they absorb a good amount of what touches their skin underneath the fur. They absorb quite a bit.
Absolutely.
And so it's very important that they're not exposed to toxic chemicals. And you got to remember this too. Look at the size of most dogs and even cats, much smaller compared to us. We might be exposed to some chemicals in the house, but we're much bigger. But you put a 8-pound cat exposed to it 24/7 on the ground, or even a 20-pound dog, you know, much smaller than us. So they're being exposed to much higher doses per pound than we are. And a lot of them don't have very good detox mechanisms either. And so while our body, human bodies are amazing in our ability to detox poisons and so forth, I mean, it really is, Mike. It's a wonder that we don't all have cancer, the way that they're dumping aluminum on us in the skies with the chemtrails, the way they're spraying known cancer-causing agents on our food, the EMF, the 5G, all these things. We're exposed to this all the time. It's amazing. God's just made our bodies in a miraculous way that we don't all have cancer from what they're exposing us to every day.
No kidding. Yeah. I want to remind people that the docuseries is called The Truth About Pet Cancer. It begins streaming March 21st. You can sign up for it. It's free to watch with an optional purchase if you want to download all the episodes and watch them on your own schedule. Otherwise, there's a new episode that airs each day on a continuous 24/7 loop. Again, it's called The Truth About Pet Cancer. March 21st at brightyou.com. And you can sign up early for it right now. You can even purchase the course early if you want before it begins. All right, let's talk about the dog parks, because I would never take my Belgian Malinois to a dog park, because the dog park is the most infested parasite haven that could possibly be found. Like, I don't want my dog around all these other dogs that have been treated with all these toxic chemicals and toxic vaccines. You know, we talk about vaccine shedding in humans. I think the same thing happens with dogs as well. So I keep my dogs away from that filth, and they instead they run around in nature, and they're eating, you know, deer bones and hog heads or whatever they find. But that's, in my view, that's cleaner than going to the dog park. What do you think?
I agree. You know, I haven't even really considered dog parks in a long time. I honestly have never even been to one. So tell me, what exactly is a dog park?
Well, it's like in a city, there's like a field that's designated as a dog park.
Okay.
For dog owners to come take their dogs, and then their dogs can, you know, fight with each other.
Okay.
Or, you know, they fight and they poop and you know, it's the most filthy place possible.
Okay. All right. I mean, I kind of assumed it was something like that, but I've never experienced one myself.
Oh yeah, they're common.
Okay.
Really. Yeah, but no, I don't to dog parks either. So.
No, I knew you didn't. But yeah, I guess we've always just kind of lived out in the country since we've had dogs and pets. So I honestly didn't even know that was a thing. But I'm not surprised that, you know, in big cities or whatever, you'd have a place where you could get together. And I would have to agree with you. I don't want them being exposed to the other filth that the dogs, you know, are exposed to, especially parasitic problems that we're seeing that are so pervasive in pets, as well as worm issues and the vaccine shedding. That's pretty legitimate too. I believe that's a thing with pets as well.
And also the other dogs will have these like flea and tick toxins, because humans put these toxic collars on their dogs that are they're just loaded with deadly cancer causing chemicals. And then your dog is playing with that dog, getting a mouthful of toxins, you know?
Yeah, that's something I'm glad you brought up, was the flea and tick collars. They are so toxic. They're not just carcinogenic, they're neurotoxic.
They are, they're neurotoxins.
The pets as well. So yeah, extremely, extremely toxic. So yeah, if you're going to a dog park and there's other pets there that have those, your dog's gonna get an unhealthy dose of that. There's better ways to prevent worms and fleas and ticks. I mean, the worms, you know, of course you mentioned ivermectin. A couple drops in food or mixed into food. That's
yeah. It's dirt cheap too.
Yeah, it's dirt cheap. It's very popular. And you know, ivermectin. Since we're talking about vaccines, this isn't specifically pet vaccine related. But see, ivermectin, the effectiveness of ivermectin with preventing COVID and also detoxifying as well, but really as a preventative to start with. The reason that was demonized during coronavirus was because the FDA could not authorize a vaccine for emergency use unless there were no other viable treatments.
That's
and ivermectin was known to be a viable treatment, so they had to demonize it in the public eye so no one would be loudly speaking about ivermectin being a treatment, because they would be censored if they talked about it. Then they got away with the authorization for emergency use.
Yep, that's exactly what they did. But I want to mention, for those who have ivermectin, you know, the typical dose for humans is 12 milligrams. I just want you to be aware that dose is about 500 times too high for an anti-heartworm prevention dose for a typical dog. You need to know that dogs take micrograms, not milligrams, right? So we're talking about a thousand times different. So don't just go feeding your human ivermectin pills to your dogs. That could be extremely dangerous. Definitely know what you're doing. The good news is that you can use AI engines, like even our engine, brightanswers.ai. You can ask it, you know, how many micrograms of ivermectin is appropriate for a dog that weighs, you know, 60 pounds or whatever, and you're going to get the answer there. Mm-hmm. And then all you have to do is figure out the mass and, you know, hopefully we still have, you know, I know the people watching this can figure it out, but the typical American maybe would be stumped right there. How do I weigh it? You know, or whatever. You need to get a little scale, like the kind that you use to weigh like gold and silver or, you know, herbs or whatever. And then the scale, you know, you get a sense of scale. You can weigh micro, or you can volumetrically do it with a pipette. If you know it's a 1% ivermectin solution, then you can use a pipette. You know, it's going to be, you know, 60 microliters or whatever. So you'll save yourself a bundle on all of that. Okay, so what else do you want to... Oh, by the way, like my dog, he looks like he's totally sleeping, right? But believe me, he's still very alert. He's paying attention. Shall we test him? should I just disturb his slumber?
I don't know. What do you think?
Let's just try a verbal one. Let's just try it. Okay. All right, here we go. Rhodey, bark. Bark. Yeah, good boy. Good boy. Good boy. Okay, sorry about that. False alarm. It's okay. So, yeah, he's paying attention, see?
That's pretty cool, man. The Rhodey's a cool dog. I like that dog.
He's totally paying attention. He's like, I'm just barking. I don't know what I'm barking at, but I'm barking. What is it?
He does what he's told.
He's watching now. He's looking. He's like, what's going on? Now he's looking where I'm pointing. See his ears? Dude's paying attention.
There he is.
Right? Oh, he's looking at my production crew. You guys better hold on to your legs and limbs. Good boy. Good boy, Rhodey. Okay, sorry about that. You can go back to sleep now. You're okay. All right.
Rhodey's a good-looking dog. What's that, a Belgian Malinois?
Yeah, Belgian Malinois, yeah. He is.
I just asked you that off the break, so yeah.
Yeah, the guy is, he's smart too. Like I give him puzzles. I think this is also important for our audience. You want to cognitively challenge your dogs and cats. But I give him puzzles. Like he has now been able to put 20 rings on his neck and around his, in his mouth, a total of 20.
I saw a video of you doing that.
Yeah. That video was only like 15 or whatever. He's hit 20 now because it's like his version of the Rubik's Cube. You know, like I have a Rubik's Cube here. That's my toy. His toy is to figure out how many rings he can put around his neck. And it's actually a difficult problem to solve using only a mouth. You know?
Yeah, no kidding.
You have to
smart dog.
Got to stack them, and then you got to reach through them to the bottom ones, and then pull them back and get them on your neck. So you doing all right? So anyway, talk to us about the importance of, you know, it's not just physically challenging your animals, but mentally challenging them, teaching them new things, keeping them engaged so they don't get, you know, lazy and stupid.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, I mean, you do need to, you play games with animals, but not just physically, but yeah, mentally. I don't know that you're going to have a dog that's going to be able to get 20 rings like Rhodey, nor do I know that you'll find a pet that's able to do the Rubik's Cube.
no, probably not, but...
Probably, you know, it's funny about the Rubik's Cube real quick, Mike. Back in 1983, 1984, when it was just becoming popular, I remember buying a book, How to Do the Rubik's Cube, that had a few pictures, but mostly just descriptions of what you had to do and learning to do it that way by memorizing all the moves. So
yes.
You remember when it first came out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We all had Rubik's Cubes back in the 80s, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they sucked back then. They were hard to
rotate.
Yeah,
they fell apart.
They were horrible.
Yeah. You couldn't, if you found one that would stay on the axis without falling, if you lubed it right,
right,
you were like, you were good to go. My record is 34 seconds. I did it in 34 seconds one time.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So that was my quickest time ever, but I used to do the Rubik's Cube all the time. But anyway,
today we have the GAN cube this is the best cube that there is now today. These are the competition cubes.
Okay, is that Rubik's Cube? Yeah, it looks like Rubik's.
Yeah, but GAN is the maker, and this is what I train on. And yeah, I memorize, you know, I memorize patterns and stuff too. I use the F2L method, and there's like I don't know, 65 patterns you have to memorize to do the most efficient version of that.
Yeah. But you know what? That's what we used to do.
Totally.
We used to read books and memorize stuff and put our brain to work.
Yes.
And we didn't have everything fed to us. Like it's all fed to us now on computers and devices. It's all fed. You're passive. We used to be active, have to do active things with our
brains. Totally.
I think that's very important. You know, some real quick, I know we've just got a few minutes left. One thing I want people to realize is that no matter what kind of pet you have, there's things that you can do to improve the pet's health that are very practical steps. And I think we talked about this, Mike, in the last interview, the first one. But if you can't afford, you know, a raw food, you know, raw, fresh, organic food, which a lot of people can't, look for the best kind of kibble that you can find and add to it. So try to find kibble that is more meat than grains, and, you know, more chicken or fish or beef as opposed to rice and GMO soy and corn. So you look for better composition, and you know what you're looking for, mostly meat. You want to try to find as much meat as you can. It's still kibble, though.
And organ meat, too.
I'm sorry?
Organ meat. So if you know a local farmer, often when they butcher a cow, they're going to have organ meats available.
And that's what you can add to the kibble.
Right, so, exactly.
Yes, Great ideas. So no matter if you can get a better kibble, do. But as Mike mentioned, you can add organ meats to it, chop them up finely. You can add raw eggs to the kibble. Great. I like to add probiotics enzymes to the kibble. Cut up thin cuts of broccoli and or kale. I know Mike said you said you like to add what, kelp?
Kelp. Yeah, I like to put in a little bit of seaweed for the polysaccharides. Yeah.
So you can, there's lots of things that you can add to kibble to make it better for them. So
that's right.
I would say, that's one thing to remember. Don't feel overwhelmed that, oh man, I don't have the money to do this.
You can also
a little bit to improve their diet quite a bit.
Cod liver oil, like, you can put a little cod liver oil. And also I like to buy sardines and, they come in a small tin can. And my dogs love sardines and those have super healthy oils in them. So sometimes I'll just add like one sardine for each dog bowl, they love that.
That's a great idea, Mike, adding one sardine, because they do love the taste, because it's meat and it's salty. So it's tasty to them. So they do like sardines, and the oils in them are fantastic as well. So yeah, that's a great suggestion, adding that as well, especially for cats. You could add that to their cat food, because the cats are kind of finicky. I was telling you on the last interview, I believe, Mike, that some of our cats would snub fresh fish because it's not their kibble. I mean, it's crazy. But I think you could probably mix in a sardine into their kibble or whatever it is that you typically feed them. Mix that. We try to mix in some meats. Some bone broth is great.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Got a lot of good. And cats are chronically dehydrated. They don't drink much water. So it's a great idea to add like a good organic bone broth to their kibble if that's what you feed them.
Yeah.
Add raw egg to it. Give them a sardine, chop up some turkey or fish or chicken or whatever you've got, a little bit of meat, mix it in. So they get a little bit more of the fresher foods and a little bit less of the processed foods.
Yeah. And remember, they can also eat astaxanthin. So you can put an astaxanthin capsule in their food, which has all the benefits that it has for humans as well. Dogs don't need, they don't need vitamin C supplementation, but there are other supplements. And I suggest people use our AI engine, brightanswers.ai, to ask questions and also check with your veterinarian if you have other questions. Get yourself a holistic vet if you don't have one already. And then finally, watch the whole show, The Truth About Pet Cancer. It begins streaming March 21st, and you can sign up for it for free at brightu.com. So that's all the time we have today. Ty, I want to thank you for spending the time with us. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for putting together this course. You're going to help many, many people and animals with great compassion. Really appreciate you, Ty.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mike. I always enjoy the conversation. And look forward to joining everyone at The Truth About Pet Cancer. It's a fun series, and you'll learn a lot that'll help your pets.
100%. All right. Well, thank you, Ty. Take care. And for those of you watching, there's also a part one of this interview that you may have missed. It's available at brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for watching today. Take care. Yes, the world is getting crazy, but here at the Health Ranger store, we're putting together a survival supply assortment for you. If you go to healthrangerstore.com/survival, you'll see what we put together for you, including iodine and iosat. That's a specific brand name of potassium iodide that's FDA approved. Or we have the nascent iodine here, which is less expensive in terms of the iodine that you get. These are available in case things go nuclear. It's clear that you will not be able to find any of this for sale anywhere. All the inventories will be wiped out, like what happened after Fukushima in 2011. So if you want to get your hands on some iodine, this is a chance to get it right now. healthrangerstore.com/survival. In addition, we have many other survival items for you here, including some silver solutions, some spirulina available in bulk and at a discount, and then a large assortment of storable organic food that's laboratory tested, including our Ranger Bucket sets. Here's a 195-day supply. We've got the mini buckets, and we've also got number 10 cans available of freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and other things like miso soup powder. Here's some of the buckets. There's a big variety available. Here are some of the number 10 cans right here. Remember, a lot of people are missing fruit. They don't have enough vitamin C in their storable food. So, getting bananas and pineapples and strawberries, especially, again, certified organic, freeze-dried. That is the highest quality with the highest nutrient preservation that you can get in any kind of a storable food format. All of this is available right now and so much more. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/survival. And because the freeze-dried foods last for so long, you know, even if you don't eat them this year or next year, just keep them on the shelf. They're going to last a very long time with good preservation, a long shelf life, and they will have value no matter what happens in the world. Now, of course, I'm praying for peace. I'm praying for de-escalation. I don't want to see World War III break out, and I certainly don't want it to go nuclear. But we're dealing with insane times and insane leaders and insane situations. Who knows what could happen tomorrow or next week? Disruptions could happen here in the United States. There could be, you know, domestic attacks that disrupt supply chains here in the U.S. So stock up early, stock up now, get your emergency food, emergency medicine, iodine, anything else that you think that you might need. Get it now. And by doing so, by shopping with us, you'll be supporting our platforms and our AI engines that we offer for free. That's funded in part by sales from our store. So shop with us at healthrangerstore.com/survival and help yourself get prepared and also help us bring you more free tools and platforms that can keep you informed no matter what happens in the world. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.